it is. It's basketball. It's not a f***ing soft sport.
I love it, Gabe.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back. This is the NBL Pocket Podcast, NBL 20 season previews tonight. The Cairns Taipans play the Kings in Cairns. Our team preview is the Kings. We've already done the Cairns. You can check that out on a previous podcast or video. Falling a bit behind with the videos there, as you can imagine, kind of hard to make, so I've put them on the back burner until now, but I will get around to it. Let's jump straight into this. Let's go to fan-based mindset, and I'm kind of combining fan-based mindset and Hollywood calling in this one scene here, but let's just go ahead and play it. This is from 1990's Dances with Wolves.
Yes, sir.
Starring Kevin Costner.
Before it's gone.
So this is Casper Ware approaching Melbourne management. The man with the parchment is Melbourne management.
I am sending you on a knight's errand. You will report to Captain Cargill at the furthermost outpost of the realm. Port Sedgwick.
They're making a mistake.
My personal seal will assure your safety through many miles of wild and hostile country.
What are Melbourne thinking, letting Casper Ware go?
I was wondering.
Yes?
Have they gone?
I was wondering, sir, how will I be getting there?
I happen to be in a generous mood. How's he going to get there? Grant your boon. See that peasant out there? He calls himself Timmins. He's going to your Fort Sedgwick this very afternoon. You can ride with him if you like. He knows the way. Thank you. That is all.
Melbourne have pilfered two players. Sydney have pilfered two players from Melbourne.
Sir Knight? I just pissed in my pants. And nobody can do anything about it.
To your journey!
Melbourne have just let the second best player in the NBL walk. They're toasting him.
To my journey!
Melbourne's journey with Long, Trimble, Prather, rather than the sure thing in Casper Ware. There he goes, he and Craig Muller, they're off on the wagon, they're off to Sydney. Muller knows the way, he's been there.
Long live the king.
Oh no, Melbourne United. I'd be shooting myself too if I let Casper Ware go. They've just basically given Sydney a ticket to the first or second place, many would think. Let's have a look. Let's jump into it. So who they acquired? Sean Bruce, Craig Muller, Casper Ware. Just a word on Craig Muller. He's not a peasant. But then again, we're all a peasant compared to Casper Ware. Kwani, Jordan Hunter, Lucas Walker, Jay Sean Tate, Didi Luzada. And they've got a developmental training player named Hunter Jack Madden. That's the best name I've ever heard. They lost Andrew Gaze as their coach, Jerome Randall, Kyle Adnam, Brian Bowen, Ray Turner, Dane Pinow, David Ware, Tom Wilson, and Deng Deng. They're the ones going up. Okay, let's jump onto consistency watch. So why do we do this? Stability breeds consistency. Consistency creates culture. Culture breeds winning in the NBL. Just ask the Perth Wildcats. That's why we have a look at this. So 8 of their 12 roster spots have changed. That's 60% of their roster. That's tied for the most personnel movement in the league, excluding the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix, who have obviously got a whole new team. Two starters are departing from Sydney, so Randall and Ware. So while this team has a high personnel turnover, only two starters. A lot of teams have changed out all three of their imports, like Melbourne, for example, who changed out Boone, Casper, obviously, and DJ Kennedy. So as much as there's a lot of individual players, only two starters. The big thing is they're changing their head coach, which is obviously a huge culture shock. We'll talk about the good and bad of that change in a moment. Let's look at their rotation. I think this is going to be the starting five. This is what started most of the blitz in preseason. Bogut, Tate, Luzada, Lish, and Ware. And coming off the bench, you've got Kickett and Hunter probably playing the five. Craig Muller at the four, maybe plays a bit smaller too. Newley, Kwani, and Bruce. They're the most logical positional substitutes. Looking at last season, this team went 18-10, good for third place. Got sort of nabbed with percentage points there. Have a look at their over-under projections from Top Sport. 16.5. I'm taking the over. They won 18 last year, as you can see. So I'd like to boil it down to a simple question. Is this team two games worse than last season? The answer, I think, is no. I think they've improved. I think, and I'll tell you the areas why I think they've improved. They have Casper Webb. They have the third best player in the NBL and the second best player at his position. Third best player behind Cotton and Andrew Bogut, and second best at his position behind behind Cotton. Whether they play the same position, that's kind of up to you, but they're very similar. No one defends like him in the league. He's really strong. If you get the chance, if you're thinking about buying, you know, a couple of games this year or whatever, definitely go to this game and get as close as you possibly can. You got to see how close. You got to get to as close to the court as you can and see how strong and quick Casper Ware really is. It's incredible. The other reason I'm picking the over, no Andrew Gaze. He was not the right coach for this team last year. His rotations were a nightmare. His emotions were up and down like a yo-yo. His timeouts were like a carnival funhouse. Everyone was talking. If you were doing a drinking game of how many times he had to yell at his guys, to get their attention in a timeout, you'd have alcohol poisoning by the second quarter. He's a virtuoso of a basketball player. He's a great commentator, but he's just not a coach. Sorry to say. Will Weaver is the new coach, obviously. He's going to have to buck a long-standing trend of rookie coaches not winning the title in the NBL. Only five coaches in the last 41 years have done it. It's 12%. However, there is four new coaches in the NBL this season. Flynn and Illawarra, Weaver himself, Dan Shamir, and Simon Mitchell in Southeast Melbourne. So there is a global trend away from long-standing coaches. We don't live in the sort of Mike Krzyzewski, Dean Smith era of coaches coaching for 20, 30 years. We actually demand a little bit more of them than that. So that doesn't really worry me, a rookie coach winning at all. Andrew Bogut is another reason I have this team as the over. He's been healthy. He's looked good. He's now in year two. Hopefully that holds up. But more importantly, he's another player returning from the FIBA World Cup. Just look at Chris Golding and Mitch Creek last night. It seems as though the FIBA World Cup is great preparation for the NBL season. You know, I mean, Bogut's been there and done that, NBA and everything else. But I think what he may have took from the FIBA World Cup this time is that he can actually really score if he's aggressive at the hoop. And I think with Chris Golding, I mean, Chris Golding's no stranger to international play, but there's something about this World Cup and the way that team played and what they demanded of the NBL guys that I think bolsters all of them. Golding, Creek, and even Bogut, even at his age at 35. And then the other reason is Luzada, he's the best of the next star's crop. And whether he's the best, he's certainly going to be the most productive, I think. A little bit stronger, a little bit older, a little bit more professional and experienced. And, he's a starter in the league. And that's good too. And a good one. Title odds, they're $4.80 to win the title, second behind Melbourne United. Let's have a look at their highest-ranked MVP candidate. It's Casper Ware, who's the number one MVP candidate at $7. This is according to TopSport. Behind that is number nine, Andrew Bogut, at $16, who's tied with John Robeson of the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix. Let's look at their import rank. I've got them as having the seventh best imports. And I know you're saying, whoa, Casper Ware. Well, Casper Ware I've got as number two. I've got Tate at number 20, which is below middle. Just because I didn't know what position he's going to play, who he is. I've seen a little bit of him. Looks pretty good. I could be talked into having him, you know, five or so spots higher, but I'd have to look at my list again. And then the other reason is they don't have a third import, so I had to assess them the bottom ranking because you'd rather have anyone than no one. So they got a 25 for that. So that's what dragged everything down. Their local rank, however, I've got them as having the best local talent because I count Luzada as a local. So I had Bogut as the best local. I had Kevin Lish at number 12 and I had Luzada at number 13. So I had them best in local. So you add it up, import rank plus local rank equals their total talent rank. 7 plus 1 equals 8. That score of 8 was third most talented behind Melbourne and Perth in that order. I don't think on pure on-paper talent many people would refute that. Maybe they could slide ahead of Perth. It's where you rate Cotton and where. Let's have a look at their schedule. So with Sydney, I normally do the first seven games. I've gone up a bit more, and I've gone up to looked at their games up until round eight. Why round eight? Well, at round eight last season, the final four was unchanged, both who made it and positional. So I thought, let's have a look at where Sydney are going to sit at the end of round eight and whether that is sort of good enough to get them first spot, which is what they're going to need to win the title. Their first game is tonight against Cairns, at Cairns. Then they play Adelaide at home, New Zealand at home, New Zealand on the road, Brisbane at home, Adelaide on the road, Melbourne on the road, Brisbane on the road. That's a horror stretch. And then they come back after that to play Perth at home. That's a big... That is where Will Weaver must be. He have that circled in the calendar saying that's where I got to have them really well prepared. And then Illawarra at home and then Southeast Melbourne. So I've got them winning their first 5 games against Cairns, Adelaide, New Zealand twice and Brisbane. The question marks come against Adelaide and Adelaide. Adelaide were a pretty mediocre team at home last year. Melbourne at Melbourne, Brisbane at Brisbane and Perth at home, but on the strength of a back-to-back. They play that game in Brisbane, then they come back to Sydney, and then they host Perth. That is a big gut check for the Kings, that game there. I don't have the date, but you can look at your pocketbook schedule and work it out. That's a big one. And then I've got them winning Illawarra at home, and then Southeast Melbourne. So their question marks are at Adelaide, at Melbourne, at Brisbane, Perth at home, and Southeast Melbourne, pretty predictably. But let's say they win... So let's say they drop all of them, they go to 6-5. If they can eke out the Perth win at home, that takes them to 7-4. And if they can beat Melbourne and Adelaide, there's every chance they can be sort of 9-2. That's not outrageous at all for them. But they're the games I think you got to look out for. I'm calling this segment of Schedule Watch Becoming the Cats Meow. Can this team win the title from the Perth Wildcats, who are still the defending titles holders? For me, it comes down to a question of who's going to win the first seed. You cannot beat Perth in Perth in the grand final. It hasn't happened in a decade, not in a series, and it's not going to happen this year. How do you get to first place? Well, let's have a look at their schedule. Sydney. I think I've discussed this on previous ones, but I'll do it again. Sydney play Melbourne, Perth, Illawarra, and Southeast Melbourne 4 times, the rest of the team 3 times. Compared to Perth, Perth played Melbourne and Sydney 4 times, obviously, but they played Brisbane and Adelaide. So the question is, what's an easier schedule? Illawarra and Southeast Melbourne or Brisbane and Adelaide? The way Southeast Melbourne played last night, I mean, it's only one game, but, there's a conversation for both and a very difficult conversation to have with yourself. And then compared to Melbourne, they play Southeast Melbourne and Cairns 4 times, which Cairns are still looking like the easier option, but again, we will find out tonight. But that's the question you have to ask yourself. Can the Kings get top spot? Well, it's whether they are able to beat Illawarra and Southeast Melbourne more often than Perth can beat Brisbane and Adelaide. That's part of the question anyway. Let's look at their back-to-back watch. So this is big for them. They've got an aging roster. I don't know if they're one of the older teams, but I'd be willing to guess that they might be. The other thing is they may not be the oldest team aggregate or total, but their stars are older. Bogut's 34-35. Newell's going to be a big part of what they do. Kevin Lish is 33-34. So it means more to them. Let's look at their back-to-backs. They have a couple. Or when I say back-to-backs, I haven't quite found a term that's good for this. It's when they play 2 games in the 1 round. So they normally either get 1 day's break or 1.5, maybe 2. It depends upon the travel. Anyway, looking at these games, they've got a game on a back-to-back at New Zealand, at Melbourne, against Perth at home. That's the one I spoke about. Cairns at home, Southeast Melbourne at home, Illawarra on the road, Southeast Melbourne at home, and Melbourne at home. So you see there's a couple of games they would like to win, especially those against Perth and Melbourne. You want to be fresh for those games, and they're coming in having played. Very interesting. Obviously, they cannot afford to lay an egg against the Breakers or the Taipans or the Hawks, 2 of which are on the road. So, back-to-backs are what they are, but keep an eye on them as the season progresses through the season. Let's move on to biggest questions for this team. Biggest question, and it's a question no one can answer until the season plays out, but can they stay healthy? Can they win backup games in the 2-game rounds like I spoke about? How will they travel? Bogut this season, he's 34 at the minute. He'll turn 35 before the end of the year. Kevin Lish is 33. Newley's 34, 35. Kickett, 36. Walker will be 35 by the end of the year. It's a worry, but they do seem to have the coverage. Jordan Hunter's come on quicker than they'd like. Full roster spot, having been DP. Good player. A lot of talk about him maturing into something special. Craig Moller, it's whether he can give them something this year. I think he can. He looked all right in the preseason. Craig Moller, you know, entering his prime. I think he's 25. Kwani Kwani didn't get a lot of time in Cairns. Doesn't seem to look as though he's going to get a lot of time in Sydney either, but certainly capable. I have my concerns about Lish and Newley. Newley's going to struggle to defend people. It's probably unfair to bring this up because Hampton is so quick, but compared to everyone, but if you go back and have a look at Hampton's highlight reel from the last preseason game against the Kings, he was switched onto Newley a few times and he was just blown by him. Now that's not uncommon. Hampton's going to blow by a lot of people, but my question really is, can Newley keep up? You know, there's going to be moments where he switches onto smaller players. Can he do it? It's going to be a really interesting narrative this season. Can Newley accept and flourish in a new role? I say yes. He seems really selfless and self-aware from the outside looking in. But finding his spots, the right minutes for him is going to be key because the matchup has to work out defensively for him. My second question for this team is, did they deliberately leave a third import spot available? It certainly seems that way. They seem to have spent large on Casper Ware. A great move. You pay whatever you can to get him. He's a game changer. And I think they're hoping to sign an import for half the season. Another way to cut costs is instead of paying a full contract, you only pay them for the last 15 games of the year or whatever. That seems to be the strategy. You know, I have no idea whether that's true or not, but it certainly shows a lot of faith in Will Weaver being able to integrate a player at short notice. And I think coaching in the G League, where player movement is pretty common in and out, I mean, I think Crete played the whole year with the Island Nets, Long Island Nets, and then didn't play the final because he got a call up to Minnesota. So, I mean, they lost the final, but still Will Weaver has an experience with bringing in guys quick and losing guys quick and somewhat adjusting. The other thing is they also have Perth Wildcat assistant Adam Ford. A lot of people have been going on about how, oh, Perth have been gutted on the bench. No Matt Nielsen, no Adam Ford. Well, you can spin it on the positive and say, well, he's gone to Sydney. So whatever benefit he gave Perth, he now gives it to Sydney as well. And maybe they did that on purpose to destabilize the former champions. Third biggest question for this team is, will the creamy middle taste as good as the top and tail? Bogut and Ware, I don't think anyone would have a problem with them, barring if they got injured, but no one can help that. But the positional soup in between, Jayshon Tate, Kevin Lish, Dida Luzada, Newley, Moller, kick it. How will that all work and fit together, and how will it go up against the likes of the talent in NBL 20? I mean, my question to you is, who in this group do you point at and go, oh yeah, such and such on the Kings is immediately going to guard and protect the rim from Tarico White, Lamar Patterson, Mitch Creek, Eric Griffin, DJ Newball, Casey Prather? You know, there's no direct matchup where I really like it. Even when Perth come to town and it's like, okay, Casper's got Cotton, he's going to give him trouble. Or Casper's got Roberson. You know, that works well. Bogut on long, anyone else. And obviously Bogut being in the key way helps defend against everyone. But, you know, who's going to stop those guys in particular putting pressure off the dribble and just, you know, in general? Lamar Patterson and Mitch Creek being the big ones for me. I mean, I think Tate sort of matches up quite well against some of them. He might match up against Creek, Griffin, maybe even Tarico. You know, it's going to be interesting. But has Kevin Lish got some go against some of these guys? Has Newley got go against these guys? Is Lazada big enough and strong enough? Kick it, I don't think, is in the conversation. Moller, you know, not many people are talking about that. Fourth question and last question for this team is rebounding. The Kings were last in offensive and defensive rebounding percentage last year, courtesy of Liam San Maria in his article, 20 Questions for NBL 20. Have they addressed that? Do they need to address that? Are they addressing it with personnel? Are they addressing it with a change in strategy? Personnel-wise, sort of. Moller and Walker are the most obvious answers. They had pretty high true rebounding percentages last year. But, you know, the problem is I don't think Walker's really going to play a heck of a lot. Moller's a different story. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. Tate is the other one, obviously. Looks very strong and unrelenting was a word that Mitch Creek used post-game from the Melbourne game, and I like that. So, and Tate seemed to have that quality. Certainly a little bit undersized for his position, but big and strong and quite long as well. Doesn't look it because he's thick, but so hopefully he can reel in the boards. Plus, I think they're in the midst of a culture change in the way they play. The offense under Gaze was stuffy. Under Will Weaver during the blitz and preseason, you know, they had a lot of fun shooting the long ball. They were certainly moving around a lot more. Players were being rewarded for defensive effort, and as a result, you know, rebounding better. And rebounding is sort of an incentive-based exercise at times. So hopefully that improves. That is all I've got on the Kings. I really like them. I really like them, especially at the over-under. What is it? 16.5. How do they lose more games this season than they did last year? I think Top Sport are probably looking at the league improving its competitiveness. I think Cairns have come off the bottom, but I still think there's some teams that are going to be negative in wins. I think Top Sport's got Illawarra quite high, and I think that's what's driving down the over-under projections of the top three, four teams, in particular Sydney, Perth, and Melbourne, because I think all of them are going to win around what they won last year, if not more. That's all. If you enjoyed this preview, by all means, reach out to me on Twitter at NBLPocketPodcast or in an email, NBLPocketPodcast@gmail.com. Oh, then my Twitter handle is at NBLPocketPod. I think I couldn't fit in the cast. Anyway, no Hollywood calling. We did that at the top. I think we're done here, don't you? A big thank you to NBL2K for creating all the lovely 2K rosters as well that, if you're watching the video version of this, are in the background. Thanks very much, and I will see you next time.